This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the G7 summit zeroes in on Russian sanctions over Ukraine. Migrants fleeing Myanmar will take a ride with the Border Patrol. The Special Olympics get ready for the 2015 World Games.
There is nothing like the revolution in social media to help us bring that challenge to people, but also to invite them to own the challenge, to take their own pictures of inclusion.
One of jazz music's great guitarists makes some big sounds with some big friends. These and other stories just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. The group of seven leading industrialized countries warned Russia Monday that they would stiffen economic sanctions against it unless Moscow fully implements a ceasefire to end fighting in eastern Ukraine between pro-Russian insurgents and Kiev's forces. At a closing news conference, President Obama said there was a strong consensus to keep pressure on Russia for its involvement in the Ukrainian conflict and its annexation last year of the Crimean Peninsula. Mr. Obama said the question for President Vladimir Putin is whether he wants to continue to, in his words, wreck his country's economy with a wrong-headed desire to recreate the glories of the Soviet Empire. Mr. Putin was excluded from the summit for the second year in a row over Russia's involvement in eastern Ukraine, which Moscow denies. Did President Obama succeed in persuading his G7 counterparts to be as tough on Russia as he had hoped? VOA's Jeffrey Young spoke with John Hudson, senior reporter at Foreign Policy Magazine.
At least when it comes to Ukraine, the administration's real big takeaway and what they succeeded at was convincing the Europeans that sanctions against Russia need to be extended. These sanctions were set to expire, and there are a number of European countries, particularly Italy and Greece, who are a little bit skeptical about the need to keep sanctions in place, and the U.S. efforts to convince them that those are important seem to win out at the end of the day. There was a statement that came out of the gathering among the G7 that would link any increase or any extension of sanctions it would actually link any lifting of sanctions on the implementation of a ceasefire agreement that was agreed to in February. So the basic message was, unless Russia improves its behavior in Ukraine and stops its outward support of Ukrainian rebels, then there's not going to be a lifting of sanctions.
There have been many people who have said it's time to provide the Ukrainian government in Kyiv with sufficient weaponry that they can get to the front of the fight and can defend their territory. I've also read multiple reports saying that there are many European leaders that definitely do not want that. They're afraid of escalation. I wonder if it's military escalation they're worried about or Putin turning off the gas valve, as he is well known to do. What do you think?
Well, it's certainly true that the Europeans are much more economically dependent on Russia than the U.S. is. And so there are European diplomats that are sort of frustrated by American hand-wringing over Ukraine, because they say, look, we're the ones who have to bear the brunt of this, and we're still recovering from the recession. But that isn't the only argument, because there are certainly, from the German perspective, is that a push to arm Ukraine is going to really break up the European unity over the crisis. And for many, it will be seen as a far too aggressive move. And that would sort of break apart this transatlantic alliance, which it's not a perfectly unified response between the United States and Europe in response to Russia, but it has been fairly consistent over the past 6 months. And so they really stress that, A, yes, we would bear the brunt of this increased sanctions, and B, they also make the argument that providing weapons might only escalate the crisis and lead to more deaths. And there's no sign that arming Kyiv would just cause Russia to simply back down instead of ramping up support. for the rebels.
That was John Hudson, senior reporter at Foreign Policy Magazine, speaking with VOA's Jeffrey Young. The ongoing conflict in Ukraine may have galvanized those who support a united, independent country, but it's also sown divisions between them and neighbors, friends, and family who lean toward Russia. The political tensions have severed relationships and even led some couples to seek divorce, as we hear from VOA's Daniel Scharf in Kramatorsk.
Lyudmila and Denis Sakhno married 17 years ago and expected to spend the rest of their lives together. But marital tensions spiked when Russia-backed rebels took advantage of a power vacuum in Kyiv to seize control of their town. Lyudmila, an ethnic Ukrainian, says while she was emotionally torn by the situation, her husband, who is half Russian, saw it differently.
He thought it would turn into a new country with new possibilities, while my attitude was that it was an occupation and impeding on my rights.
Lyudmila, a restaurant manager, says they made a deal not to talk about politics at home. While she followed Ukrainian news online, Denis, a construction worker, received his information from Russian state television.
I was always indifferent. If Ukraine, let it be Ukraine. If Russia, let it be Russia. We had some discussions and some arguments.
As the quarrels became a daily occurrence, the couple split up and then filed for divorce. Kramatorsk Marriage Registration Office head Yulia Parshina says during the last year of fighting, many couples became scared and canceled wedding plans. Or, like Lyudmila and Denis, they split because of political differences or when the men joined the rebellion.
We don't usually ask why people divorce, but among my friends, relatives, and acquaintances, I can say that a lot of families were broken because some were for United Ukraine and some supported the DPR.
As the armed men in the streets pushed anti-Ukrainian attitudes and clashed with Ukrainian forces, Denis's views toward the rebels changed.
It dawned on him what was happening. He saw the process from inside. He understood and saw that they were not building something new, but just destroying.
Lyudmila, however, acknowledges her view of Ukrainian authorities was also somewhat overly enthusiastic.
We both understood in the wrong way. It was not only about me not understanding correctly. I have regrets, not only about our relations, but my main regret is that I was fooled.
Although they agreed to finalize the divorce, Denis and Lyudmila are on friendly terms, and Denis still holds out hope of saving their marriage. Despite the ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine, they both see a better future. This is a war of politics, they agree, not a war of Ukrainians versus Russians. Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Kramatorsk.
Coming up, a ride with the Myanmar Border Patrol.
What is it like to study in the United States? And what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. The plight of boat people in the Indian Ocean has seen thousands taking to the seas on rickety ships seeking work or safe haven. Many are Muslim Rohingya who've been fleeing Myanmar on a regular basis since sectarian violence erupted in 2012. VOA's Colin Lovett rode with the Myanmar Border Patrol in western Rakhine State, which says there is to combat the human trafficking. He spoke with Francis Alonzo about what surprised him the most.
I was actually surprised that the Myanmar Border Patrol had taken this extensive of a step to fence off an entire 63-kilometer river with Bangladesh, the purpose, of course, being to prevent human trafficking. They say that they haven't actually captured any human traffickers after 2 years of patrol, that all of the incidences that they've had so far have involved regular crimes such as drug trafficking. However, the Myanmar Navy in the last month has rescued over 900 people from two different ships. We had a chance at the invitation of the Myanmar government to go meet with 200 Bangladeshis who were among the people who were on one of those ships. And they talked about horrific conditions on those ships. Myanmar has promised to do all it can, not only to rescue people who are stranded on the ships already, but also to do everything it can to prevent further acts of human trafficking in the future.
Now, let's talk about those conditions. Can you describe what the victims told you? Tell us, who is it that you encountered?
Well, the people we encountered were 200 men. They were all Bangladeshis. They came from a ship that had 208 men. The other 8 men were Rohingya from Myanmar, and we were not given access to them. The Bangladeshis who we did talk to talked about horrific conditions, nightmarish, that they were out there for 3 months on the open seas, that they were fed 2 grams of rice or less a day, very little water, and that they were beaten if they asked for more. The crew of the boat said that they would take them back home, but only if they paid a significant sum of money to them for people in their condition.
When you visited with the victims, who did they say the traffickers were?
Thai. The captain of the boat was Thai. Many of the crew were Thai. There were a couple of translators who were Bangladeshi, or at least spoke Bengali, to translate between them and the crew. At least 9, plus the captain, are in detention in Myanmar and being investigated for human trafficking. We were not given access to them to get their side of the story, but Myanmar officials say that a report will be issued in due course.
So when you spoke to the men, to the victims, what happens to them now? Where do they go? Where do they stand? Will they go back to Bangladesh?
Actually, yes. Bangladesh has agreed to accept all 200 back. They have verified their claims of Bangladesh citizenship. More than 100 of them have already left. We don't know when the repatriation will be finished, but we would expect that it would not be too long of a time.
Just recently, Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina had said that those who were leaving the country were going to be punished. Did they fear any kind of punishment once they got back to Bangladesh? Did they mention any of that to you?
They didn't directly mention any fear of punishment, but interestingly, when we were in the first room, they divided the group into 2 groups of 100. And we asked the men, the first few men told us that they were victims of kidnapping, that they had gone to Cox's Bazar looking for local work, and that they had been tricked onto getting onto boats or outright kidnapped onto getting onto boats and then sold to a larger boat at sea. We can't tell whether they were telling the truth, but when we asked an interesting follow-up question, which is, in the future, do any of you expect to or hope to go overseas looking for work, 3/4 of the men raised their hand.
VOA's Colin Lovett in Myanmar speaking with Francis Alonzo here in Washington.
This is Greenbeat.
A solar-powered airplane slowly makes its way around the world. And despite having to make an unscheduled stop in Japan, the Solar Impulse 2 has already accomplished a major feat, flying day and night with only the power of the sun. Bertrand Piccard is a pilot and one of the founders of the project.
The longest flight of a solar airplane ever, distance and duration, 44 hours from Nanjing to Nagoya.
With a 72-meter wingspan containing 17,000 solar cells, the Solar Impulse 2 took off earlier this year in Abu Dhabi.
André Borsberg on his way off to Amman. The round-the-world flight attempt has begun.
Pilots Piccard and André Borsberg take turns at the helm of the single-seat aircraft, which averages about 70 kilometers per hour. The trip was expected to take at least 5 months to complete, but bad weather has hampered the journey. I'm VOA's Rebecca Ward for Greenbeat.
Athletes from around the globe are coming together next month for the 2015 Special Olympics World Games in Los Angeles. Athletes from more than 170 countries will compete from July 25th to August 2nd. But this year's games will be a graduation of sorts for an organization that served young people with disabilities for almost 50 years. VOA's John Walker has a preview.
The Special Olympics, Flame of Hope, is on the road to Los Angeles. That's where athletes from some 170 countries will compete in 25 different sports. Americans have lined the torch route to show support for Team USA, which has nearly 500 members, and that's just the beginning. Special Olympics chairman told hashtag VOA that this year's event is using social media to expand the movement.
There is nothing like the revolution in social media to help us bring that challenge to people, but also to invite them to own the challenge, to take their own pictures of inclusion, to tell their own stories of how they've overcome their own fears or prejudices.
Demetrius Cutchin of Washington, D.C., is already practicing his kicks for the soccer competition. He recently told VOA's Sonny Young that he's ready for action.
I think we're going to do a little penalty kick shooting in soccer. I'm going to try to stop your shot. Do you think I can stop your shot?
Nah, you can't stop it. You're too quick for it. That's why.
Okay. Good luck, Demetrius.
Good luck to you, too.
In another first, the U.S. sports network ESPN will carry comprehensive TV coverage of the World Games. Tim Shriver calls that a big graduation for the organization.
We are getting out of the idea that Special Olympics is just cute or nice or sweet, and we're finding ourselves on the network that features sports as courageous and brave and skillful, dramatic, challenging, and in so many ways captivating.
Already, some 5 million athletes compete in at least one Special Olympics event each year. Former athlete David Egan, who's now a global messenger for the movement, says he hopes the increased exposure will inspire and educate.
Well, Special Olympics have changed my life, and I know it can change your life, too. I think that itself is a powerful message as it is. And you can see that in all of our athletes, even also the Young Athletes Program, too, that Special Olympics also has as well. You can see the joy on their faces as well. And so it's for Special Olympics is for all ages and all abilities. So it's really great to see that power being shown and have them being viewed around the world as a great example of how they could be contributing members of society.
The 2015 World Games begin on July 25th and end on August 2nd. John Walker, VOA News.
Participants and supporters can follow the torch relay as it makes its way across the United States at www.unifiedrelay.org and by following hashtag Unified Relay on Twitter. They can donate to the Special Olympics by texting FLAME to 91999 or visiting at Special Olympics on Twitter.
From the ordinary to the extraordinary, you never know what in the world will happen next.
The world is watching with grave concern as Russia has positioned its military.
You should not allow anyone to deprive you of your right to determine the future.
We are using this against terrorist groups coming from Turkey.
With a landing on
and civilians. Sponsored by, no, we are not killing civilians.
This with all that's happening, VOA News works to keep you up to date every hour of every day. So when you want to know what's new, you know what to do. Tune in your radio or click on the internet. World News on the hour, every hour, or at your convenience at voanews.com.
One of the great guitarists in the world of jazz music recently spent a weekend making music with his friends. Here's VOA's Steve Norman to give us a listen.
Well, he's done it again. Grammy Award-winning jazz guitarist Earl Klugh just hosted his annual Weekend of Jazz in the U.S. city of Colorado Springs and invited some other world-class talent, such as Burt Bacharach, Dave Grusin, Lee Ritenour, Nikki Yanofsky, and jazz enthusiasts from all over the world simply to have some fun. Clue's big hit, Dr. Macumba. With more than 30 albums to his credit and dozens of awards, Clue never stops performing. And as he told Fox 21 TV, it's for good reason.
This really has helped me over time playing the guitar because basically I'm a shy person. But, you know, I love it. You know, I just really enjoy it.
When you think of the women of jazz, names like Ella Fitzgerald, Nina Simone, and Rosemary Clooney come to mind. But there's some new names on the scene. Nikki Yanofsky's one of them. Here, singing I Got Rhythm.
I got rhythm, I got music. I got my bed, who can ask for anything more? I got daisies in green pastures. I got my bed, who can ask for anything more? Home in trouble. I don't want him. You won't find him around my door. I got starlight. I got sweet dreams. I got my man. You can ask for anything more. Ba ba da ba da ba da ba da da do 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 ba ba da ba 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 da ba da ba da ba 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 da ba da ba da do 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 ba ba da ba da ba da ba da ba ba ba. I'm in trouble, but it did it in me. You won't find him. I got rhythm, I got music.
Representing all the millennials who love jazz, it's 21-year-old Nikki Yanofsky. Wouldn't be a jazz festival without two of the really great songwriter performers of all time. That's Dave Grusin on the piano. He's written so many award-winning songs for the movies and TV and more. And Lee Ritenour, a guitar virtuoso whose talent is second to none. They're teaming up with a lot of other talent on the stage in Colorado Springs to perform Grusin's Mountain Dance.
Star South African runner Oscar Pistorius could be eligible for parole by August, less than a year after he was convicted in the shooting death of his girlfriend, Reeva Steenkamp. South African media reported Monday that correctional officials and an unnamed member of Pistorius' family have confirmed that he will be released into house arrest. Under the original terms of his 5-year sentence for culpable homicide, good behavior could shorten his time served to the minimum of 10 months. In a statement and in comments to South African media last month, Steenkamp's parents protested the idea of early release, saying incarceration of 10 months for taking a life is simply not enough. Meanwhile, court officials in the capital Pretoria confirmed Monday that the state will appeal to reverse Pistorius' acquittal on murder charges. Pistorius was tried for killing his girlfriend, a well-known model, back in February of 2013 at his Pretoria home. The Olympic athlete said he mistook her for an intruder when he shot four times through a locked bathroom door, killing her. The prosecution argued that the shooting was intentional. The U.S. Army said Monday it temporarily took down its website after an element of the service provider's content was compromised in a hacking incident. A group aligned with the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad claimed responsibility. The so-called Syrian Electronic Army boasted of the hack on Twitter and shared an image of an anti-U.S. message posted before the website went completely dark. The group, which first surfaced online in 2011, has claimed responsibility for hacks on a string of other targets, including a U.S. Central Command, government contractors, and media outlets. The site remained offline late Monday afternoon, although the Army said it would only be temporary. Chief of U.S. Army Public Affairs said today an element of the Army Military Service Provider's content was compromised. After this came to our attention, the Army took appropriate preventative measures to ensure that there was no breach of Army data by taking down the website temporarily. That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can access more news and information on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador Anthony Wayne met with the deans of public and private universities in Mérida, Mexico, on May 25th to promote the exchange of students and teachers between the United States and Mexico. During the meeting, they discussed the efforts and interest of both governments in student exchange programs, including President Barack Obama's 100,000 Strong in the Americas initiative, which seeks to promote increased international educational exchanges between the United States and Latin America, the Caribbean, and Canada. The goal of the initiative is to reach 100,000 annual exchanges in each direction. Ambassador Wayne highlighted the importance of the U.S.-Mexico Bilateral Forum for Higher Education, Research, and Innovation, which promotes prosperity in the region through student exchange. The group also discussed barriers to student exchange, including misconceptions about the security situation in Mérida or the cost of education in the United States. It also explored how to mobilize more private sector support to fund students of limited means. I appreciate the valuable opportunity to talk to such a distinguished group on a subject that is vital for the prosperity of our countries, said Ambassador Wayne, and get your views on how we can work together to support our future leaders while learning from each other through study in the neighboring country. Mérida, with its excellent security and numerous universities, is a city with a great potential to send and receive students. I look forward to working closely with our partners in Mérida to build on their successes. Ambassador Wayne also congratulated the Autonomous University of Yucatan and Anahuac Mayab University for winning a grant competition from the 100,000 Strong Initiative. The United States is proud to work with its partner Mexico to promote academic exchanges which benefit both nations and the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.